Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Assembly Rooms Ballroom. The Duke of Edinburgh is dead. The King of Edinburgh is mostly alive. Most of him still alive. He's a little bit not alive anymore. Will you please welcome Richard Herring? Hooray! It's Edinburgh. We're back. Oh my goodness, thank you very much, thank you for coming everyone, welcome to the show. This is my it's my 26th Edinburgh Fringe, now we're starting today. Yeah, people, you weren't even alive 26 years ago, were you mad? It's 35 years since I first did, you were alive 35 years ago. it's my 43rd show, so welcome along to Richard Herring's Lothian Scottish Thistle podcast. It's very... Hey! Hello! It's very Scottish. It's a Scotch. I've been here for at least 26 fringes, right? I've lived in the Edinburgh Fringe for over 2 years, so I am more Scotch than any... If I see a two-year-old child, I say, I'm more Scotch than you, even if they're dressed in tartan. We're starting well. I was talking to the lionesses, the English lionesses, the other day. Hooray, everyone in Scotland, cheer for... Oh, that's weird. Oh, no, there's some... Oh, there is some support. There's a lot of English people in Edinburgh, let's face it. They're barely Scottish here in Edinburgh. They call it Rahalastapus. I don't know if that's going to... Don't know if that's going to catch on. So look, it's exciting to be here in the ballroom. Bit insensitive to put me in the ballroom and after the... last couple of years. Yeah, you're going in the ballroom, Rich. Well done. Thanks a lot. And Liam's here. How are you doing, Liam? Are you all right? Yeah. Did you come to every show last time? You missed one. Yeah. It's a bit sad. Are you coming to every show this time?
For at least half of it.
Half of it? It's that's. Well, can you still just buy tickets to the ones you're not coming to?
That's good. It's good to see Liam David's here. Hello. I mean, I know most of the audience. The thing is, quite a lot of my audience died during COVID because they're quite old, so that's why it's not quite full, but it would have been full any other time. I'm very excited to be back. It's lovely to be here. Look, I think we'll crack straight on because, you know, I can't write 12 days of stand-up. It's too much to ask. I'll tell you, my 4-year-old son has a joke that he doesn't understand himself. But it makes him very... It really is much funnier if it's delivered by a 4-year-old who doesn't understand it but is still delighted when it gets a laugh. And it's funny coming from a 4-year-old. His joke is, why do squirrels swim on their backs? To keep their nuts dry. But you have to imagine a 4-year-old doing it who doesn't understand what nuts are. Again, insensitive. I find it insensitive from my son to do that. Look, we're going to crack straight on. My first guest of this edit, we've saved the best till first. I honestly think this is going to be a classic Rahal Astapar. Not very good, thank you. And you're wearing a T-shirt as well, so well done. She is probably best known for her appearance on Dinner Date. Will you please welcome the amazing Harriet Dyer, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is, Harriet Dyer. Don't trip over. Come on in. Sit there. Sit down. Welcome. There's some water for you there, and you get to keep the mug, Harriet.
Oh, brilliant.
I was a guest on Rahal Astapar, so don't forget it at the end. Don't take my one. No. That says I am the host of Rahal Astapar. only I'm allowed that one. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us about Dinner Date. So, you did a few before you were... a comedian, or as you were starting being a comedian, you did a few reality shows.
Well, I was incredibly lonely, so I thought, well, I don't know why I did it, really, and I was terrible at it, and he was really ill. Like, I didn't cook my chicken properly. Well, what happened was, so when he arrived, well, there was a multiple of issues, really. So when I arrived, the camera people told me that he'd already slept with the first lady. Well, not the first, Michelle. Because there's three people and then the first one. And she really liked him as well. Anyway, so, but I didn't, but it wasn't a spite poison. You know, I didn't, it was, so, and then first of all, so he said, oh, I didn't know we were having bread rolls. And I was like, they're my fish cakes. They were just really massive. They were my mum's recipe of sardines. But they were called Queen of the Sea fish cakes. And then he was mocking me because they were sardines. But they were a family recipe. Anyway, so then it was all very... I was very anxious about the whole thing, and it was all quite nerve-wracking. And then so what had happened was I'd accidentally, when I'd cooked my fish cakes, I must have turned the oven off, but then the heat from the oven and the fish cakes made the outside of the chicken look like it was cooked, but it wasn't. And he was bum-weeing the next day. He was supposed to choose his final date, but he was seriously ill. And that was my fault, yeah.
Did he choose you after that?
Of course not. He chose this guy. Do you know what he said as well? He goes, I couldn't live with that. And then did an impression of me. That was like... Rah, rah, rah. He chose a woman that got a snake out in the middle of dinner. And that was... So he chose her.
Was she the one
he
slept
chose.
With?
He no!
With? So he'd slept with one.
Yeah.
Then got sick with you, then had a snake and thought, I'm going for the third one.
It's like Craig David. He had a... slept with her on Monday, then had a snake on Tuesday, then had the shits on Wednesday.
Fabulous. Well, look, Harriet, there's a lot to talk to you about. I've read your book, which is called Bipolar Comedian. You were bipolar before it became trendy.
Yes, I was, yes.
It doesn't really distinguish you from all the other comedians in the world now, this the book. Well, look, what I love about this book is that you've self-published this book, and it's very much written in the style of Harriet Dyer, I think. So it's nobody's come in and said... No, we need you to... We're going to take out a bit of this Cornish vernacular. We're going to tidy... We're going to not have you libelling people and being offensive about people. So it's well... You can get it from Amazon, right?
And, and if you strongly disagree with Amazon, you can just get in touch with me and I will give you one from Amazon.
But I enjoyed it very much. I've read it very quickly in the end, and I didn't think I was going to finish it, but I finished it this morning. It's very exciting. But I think as with a lot of comedians, well, you're different than a lot of comedians in that I think you're not, you haven't kind of gone through that sort of middle class. Well, you were a student, but it hasn't come through the same sort of student channels necessarily. And it's you don't often get people who come from a more working class, authentic background getting to write a book, right? I think which I was saying backstage, like Limmy did it, I think, and it's a fantastic book. And Cunt and the Gang, he's written a fantastic book. But most comedians' books are quite similar. And this is, it shows a life that I don't think usually gets recorded in books, right? Which is not all very happy either, right? A lot of it's... In fact, there's lots of funny stuff in it, but it's also about mental illness, rape, suicide, self-harm, death, and being born in Kingston-upon-Thames, which was the most shocking thing out of all the things that happened in the book. I can't believe that you were born in Kingston-upon-Thames. Because you've sort of created... you're very much a Cornish woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you moved to Cornwall when you were how old?
At four.
Yeah, so you're young. So I was born in Yorkshire and moved out of Yorkshire when I was four as well, so... I grew up in Somerset, so I have a lot of... Although Cornwall, even to someone in Somerset, Cornwall is a far and distant land full of very strange people. At least I understand a bit more because I'm from Somerset, which is close. What made you want to write the book? And what it's the honesty of it, I think, is just the most exciting thing about it.
Because I love reading autobiographies, so yeah. I read every single night before bed. I genuinely believe it. Like if I don't, I feel like weary. The next day I don't feel ready. I think there's some science behind it, possibly that if you read before bed, it makes you good. That's the science. So I read a lot of autobiographies. I love being inspired by people that have, well, like what you were saying, the people that have been through stuff, and I feel like, oh, brilliant, I find it inspiring. So after reading a lot of autobiographies, I thought, oh, well, I think I've got as much to say. And the whole self-published thing was no one else wanted it, so that's why I did it myself. I'd been trying to write it all down since like 2018, but during lockdown I had time, didn't I? Yeah. So I properly got it all down, but it dredged up a lot. There was so much stuff because there was even there was like a little bit of abuse before the abuse that I never even knew was abuse until I was, because it's just like, when it's just weird shit that kids do. But then I was like, oh God, there's so much more terrible stuff that happened to me before. But it's weird when you say it all like that in a list, it's like, oh goodness.
Well, it is shocking and it's very upsetting, but it is also... I think some of the things that happened to you are hopefully not as common, but I think a lot of the... If you just read it as a dating book, it's like, it's the dates you've been on have been from pretty terrible to absolutely horrific, the boyfriends you've had and the things you've been through. And I think if you read it as a comedian's book, it's a very honest portrayal of starting up as a student and as an open spot and where you go from there. But again, I think that's what's interesting about the book. I think if it had been gone through a traditional publisher, they would have taken all the rough edges off and they would have changed it to something different. And I think that's what makes you work as a comedian as well, is your realization that you had to be yourself right on stage rather than trying to conform to... And I think if this had been put through a publisher, it wouldn't be the same book. And I think that would be a shame. So everyone should read it. I mean, there's a lot of it is you settling old scores with people, with your friends from Cornwall, which I just quite like. I just like the fact that I think everyone should get to write a book, because if you could read their book, you go, oh, that's why they behave like that. They'll read it and go, oh, that's why Harriet was weird to me on that occasion. So it's quite good. Everyone should do it. But at the end of their lives... So we only work out just at the end why we're all dicks to each other. I do recommend it. It's fantastic. But it's... because I think there's a couple of interesting things as a stand-up that you talk about.
and a couple of bits of advice. I think, like, realising, the bit where you realise, like, there's a lot of stand-ups in the open mic circuit, and I think beyond, who are just sort of knock-offs of other comedians.
Oh, yeah, we were saying that earlier, weren't we? Yeah. Because I was saying I didn't even realise that they were knock-offs from people until I saw the actual person that they were the knock-offs of, and then I was like, by Jove. Which I learned that, I always thought it was by George. So I learned that recently.
I think you can have either. Well, I like also that you learnt, you said you put... You said you learnt that you put your dad on a pedal stool.
Yes.
And you only learnt in writing the book.
Yes.
Because the autocorrect came up with his pedestal.
I was like, what is wrong with this autocorrect? I thought, oh, it must be on the American setting.
I like the idea of a pedal stool, though. I'm like putting someone on a pedal stool.
It's
a stool. What is it? A stool with a pedal? You can pump them up.
But is it not a common? Does everyone not?
I think everyone knows it's pedestal.
But what's a, someone recently I spoke to, though, they thought it was as well. Maybe I just surround myself with idiots.
I like it took you to write a book to find out. I think that's quite... Well, look, it's... Talking of your dad, you put on a pedestal. I mean, that's it's sort of right from the start. You're very lovely about your mum, especially, but and your dad really. But your dad turned out that he was gay, but really, and so hadn't been able to be honest about that.
Yeah, because it was illegal.
Yeah.
So when he was born in the late 40s, it was illegal to be gay, and my dad. I mean, it's backwards at the best of times in Cornwall, let alone when you're gay and living on a farm. So he conformed and settled down and got married. And then my poor mum, she just, because she was, he was only ever her love. She was never with anyone else. Yeah. Although, did I say in the book, she was with, there was like this advertising campaign in the 70s, I think I did, of a man that was pregnant. Yeah. It was this advertising campaign. And it was when my mum was about to marry my dad, the man that was in the advertising campaign as a pregnant man confessed his love to her. He was like a diamond maker called Ray that lived in London. And then she chose my dad. So I think she often thought, what if I'd
chosen that pregnant man who dealt in diamonds? That would have been better. He could get pregnant, save me having kids. That would have been good. And he had diamonds. It was a poor choice. But I mean, and then, you know, there's you had a horrific partner who treated you incredibly badly, and but also you sort of nearly, I mean, this was one of your first routines, right? It was about nearly dying twice.
Yeah.
So you basically died on the operating table. You claim you saw yourself from
above,
right?
Yeah. So what happened was my appendix burst whilst I was in a nightclub, and I didn't know, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just dance off the pain. And then... that old chestnut. And then, but it might be... So when I went into hospital, I apparently died, and then people go, oh, did you see light and all this business? But I didn't. But it was quite light. But the hospital, I imagine,
yeah, there was a light
the
on,
lights,
yeah.
Yeah, the lights were on.
I don't
on.
Think it's just a light. I don't even know. I've seen a light there.
Yeah,
I don't think I can claim that I've had a spiritual experience.
But I remember looking down and seeing the surgeons, but then. Like tinkering away on me, but then a friend of mine said, well, maybe there were mirrors in the ceiling, but I think, but then surely, unless it was in Hugh Hefner's bedroom, there doesn't tend to be mirrors on the ceiling in the
some
hospital.
Some surgeons might get turned on by that. Like some people might like to know, they might be scared of blood, but they can look at blood in a mirror.
But you'd be, yeah, because it would be the wrong way around, wouldn't it? Bloody hell.
And then what happened after you survived appendicitis?
Yeah.
I was reading this, just I had to take my son to A&E because he had stomach pains, and I think I was reading the book, and I think this is what spurred me on to say he didn't have appendicitis.
Did he have sharp wind?
He just had a little bit of stomach pain there. But I took him to A&E, and I wish, so I'm going to blame your book. I was in A&E for 7 hours waiting for my son to get sick.
Oh, no.
So thanks a lot.
Wait a minute.
Because I was going to die like you nearly did.
Wait, but you read about, so you thought that would happen?
Well, I just thought there was a couple of other things that maybe, it wasn't just I'm reading Harriet Dyer's book.
Good.
I don't want my son to turn out like her.
To the hospital,
however long it takes. But yeah, it was weird. It was a weird coincidence that was happening, but yeah, he did. But they didn't, I don't know what's wrong with him. He's still got stomach pains.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll be all right. Probably. I've got two kids. So. he's the spare. I think he'll be okay. And so what? Then what happened?
Pneumonia.
Yes.
In the hospital. But there's the Kerno doc in Cornwall came out to, and he said I was fine. So then the other doctor that used to be a vet came out, and then he was like a classic guy. It was like, well, why are you touching that? But then he was like, get to hospital. And then I got sent home but couldn't breathe. And then I remember watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is of no relevance, but I remember watching it, and it was very long whilst not being able to breathe, which made it seem longer. And then the vet doctor came back out, and he was like, I think she's got pneumonia. So then I went back in.
The doctor came out. No, just there. Everyone's just let that pass. Everyone's just saying, yeah, whatever. Yep.
But then the nurse didn't have her glasses on, so then she didn't plug me into the the
life support thing, the ventilator.
Ventilator. I always want to say incubator. That's where. Imagine you're going to get your baby, yeah, and that's me.
It might have been where the vet was keeping his chickens and hatching his chickens.
Let's move a chicken aside. So then I died again.
You died again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how did they get you back alive again?
Well, I don't know really. Oh, yeah, maybe bejumped me.
Okay.
And then...
it'd be nice if they told you afterwards, wouldn't it?
Thing about that was, yeah, they didn't tell me until I was friends with this girl. Oh, I didn't mention this in the book, actually. This girl that I accidentally got a man kidnapped. But through this woman, anyway. So, but her mum...
Didn't mention that in the book. Well, there's things in this book where you go aside and there's a paragraph and you go, other people would have written a whole book about that paragraph. This is just something...
Well, because I wanted it to sort of flow. So there was some stuff that, yeah.
Yeah,
but this woman, she was a girl when I knew her, but she had connections with the Cornish Mafia, anyway. So she, which I didn't know were a thing, but her mum was a surgeon. So her mum actually told her to be careful, because I'd go out on the piss with her and do drugs and stuff, and her mum was like, you need to stop doing that with her, because she bloody died twice in hospital. So it was only through her that I knew I did. Yeah, the doctors didn't tell my mother or anything, right, which you would have thought they would have mentioned.
You'd think they would. Maybe they were embarrassed that you died twice, thinking, we can't die once, that's could happen to anyone. Twice, we better not say anything.
Oh yeah, that's
true.
Or we
might not be allowed to be doctors anymore. We got away with it.
Oh, yeah, that would have been it. Because as well, one of the nurses, she used to take me on the balcony and I used to smoke weed with her when I had pneumonia.
It's another country, isn't it, Cornwall? I mean, you know, it's another world.
I think it is, because people always think of it as holiday homes and a lot of money, but I don't see that side of it.
It's a fascinating... I haven't been there very much. It's such a brilliant place and such a different place, and there's so few places in the United Kingdom you go to that are like noticeably different.
Yeah,
and the people are very different, and these sort of the stories in the book are, you know, are full. I mean, so much has happened to you that you got knocked out by a seagull.
I bloody did, yeah. So,
you know, there's a light side to this, but that's one of the lighter stories, being hit in the face by a seagull. Have you done anything to it? A lot, because you've got dyspraxia, okay, which means obviously there's quite a lot of accidents happen to you, but that being hit in the face by a seagull can't be put down to dyspraxia.
Well, I must say, I haven't been diagnosed with dyspraxia. No, it's just everyone. Well, my driving instructor was the first person that told me that he thinks I've got dyspraxia, because I had to look at my feet when I was moving the pedals.
Okay.
But, you know, you need to look ahead, really. So it was him, and then because I was saying it at a gig, also that was the reason. I totally forgot. The other Harriet on the circuit has a whole bit in her stand-up about dyspraxia. So I was like, well, that's her thing, isn't it, really? So that's why I thought I'll leave her to it. But then, so once at a gig, I was saying that everyone thinks I've got dyspraxia, and then this man in the audience came up to me afterwards. He was like, oh, my daughter's got dyspraxia. And I said, oh, can I stop there? Because I don't want you to think I'm, you know, doing it a disservice by saying, because I haven't been diagnosed. And he was like, can I stop you there? You've absolutely got it. And then I stood back in shock, knocked into a speaker, and then on the floor, because I've always got a really runny nose, so I thought I'd dropped my tissue, so I went to pick it up and then realized it was someone's used wet wipe, and then was like, ugh, and then threw it in the poor man's face. So then, like, as a reflex, so the poor man had, you know, wanted to talk to me about his daughter, and I ended up almost squashing him with the speaker and then flinging a used wet wipe in his face, the poor man. Why did I tell you? Why did I? Sorry.
I don't know.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
But I think, you know, by comedy's like a great place to discuss this stuff. It's also, it feels like you found. The whole book is about you trying to find your place in the world, right? And it's sort of so tragic because you go through all these awful relationships and where you're just trying to fit in and guys are using you and being unpleasant to you and much worse than that as well. But it feels like when you finally found comedy and found your place in it that you've found a good place for yourself. It's a great story in that sense.
Yeah, because I didn't even know. Because a lot of people, well, like what you were saying earlier, a lot of people have watched certain comedians all their lives and that's what's inspired them, whereas I didn't really watch a lot of comedy. Well, I was too busy dying twice and getting hit in the head. That was the question about dyspraxia.
Yeah.
I was looking for my friend Batty on the beach with a can of scrumpy and... That's when the seagull... I don't know why, actually. I must have smelt delicious. the fizzy apple. Sorry, I'm doing, like, you know that old Two Ronnies sketch where someone answers the previous previous question?
Okay. I'll just ask the question. You answer them whenever you like.
Sorry.
You can come back tomorrow if you want.
What was the question?
The question that I actually asked? Yeah. It was just about. I mean, I think. Well, it's really good that what's great about this book is talking about these issues. I think in all the for everything, for both about the mental issues, but also about how the comedy business is for you, and you know, and how dating is for people. Because I think a lot of people would, you know, don't live that life, but it's obviously a life that is. Is the experience for many, many people, right? You've had a lot of loser, horrible men taking advantage of your, fairly sweet and maybe a little bit naive nature.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying in my show as well, because my parent, well, so I didn't know my dad was gay, so I thought they had this wonderful relationship. So then I was desperate for, like, companionship and that from a really young age and just wanted to find someone, yeah. Which is weird for a child, isn't it? For, like, I would ask people out, and I always thought it was because they'd always turn me down because I didn't look like what a girl looked like at that time. But now I think... Well, just because they didn't want long-term relationships at the age of five, that would have been it. So I bumbled along trying to find someone, and But I think some of it has to be down to me for just picking terrible people and not being.
But you're trying to find your place, and it's the people that you're presented with, and you've made some really bad choices. But equally. It's not your fault, I don't think. I think it's the fault of the terrible people that you interacted with. And some of them well-meaning and just terrible.
Yeah.
And some of them not well-meaning and terrible. So.
Well, someone said that it should just be called The Book on Really Shit Men, which is I don't think that's quite as catchy.
I think it's good to... I mean, for you as well as the audience, it's good. You've obviously done this... You do this night, which I don't know if you still do post-COVID, with the... about the Barking Tales.
Yeah, so when I now do it in a... I've got my own place... Well, I've got this place... It's a wonderful building. It used to be it's a listed building, and the guy that runs it rents out... So there's different rooms with different things. I think there's a man that lives in the building that shouldn't live in the building, but everyone... Because there was an email saying they think someone lives in the building, and then everyone was just started being weird with me. So everyone just assumed, out of everyone in the building, that I would be the person that is secretly living in the building, which is very upsetting. But it used to be a drama school where Saran Jones and Jane Horrocks went in Manchester. It doesn't look fancy now, definitely not. But the... So what happened was, So a lot of people that come to my mental health comedy night are autistic and sensitive to noise and that. And the venue, the venues I was at before, it was admittedly a combination of the venues and my technical skills that were often like blowing a speaker out or just terror. And I was bringing these poor people into, you know, a safe space. And then they like blooming 11 from Stranger Things with their ears bleeding. That was a bit dramatic. But, and so I wanted to go somewhere else after lockdown. And then there was this other place that was like a mental health place, but I thought it was, I'm not going to say who it is, but it was encouraging people that have mental health problems, but it was more like, because it's trendy rather than, because it was like, we got sad once at university, like, get back to me when you're blooming, you know, rubbing speed in your eyes and trying to hang yourself. So I, not that that is the bar. In fact,
if you want to be in Barking Tales, you have to try that.
Sorry. So then I moved it. So I was going to have this place in as an office because my partner's four children moved in at the beginning of lockdown, and they are feral. So and we had no space. So I was going to have an office, and then the guy was like, "Oh, we'll show you a bigger space." And I was like, "Well, I don't need to see a bigger space." So then he showed me the bigger space, and I was like, "Oh, well, I could have my Barking Tales in this." But then the guy is a shyster, and he was... I didn't even ask if I'm allowed to swear, but I have been. Oh, good. Well, that's good, isn't it? Because otherwise I've mucked it up.
Yeah. I think shyster would have been okay.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah, that was... I'd have let you.
I think they've got to be over 14 to be in here. Let's see, that lady in the second row is still not me. Not me. Say motherfucker if you want.
Okay. Well, no. Maybe if it sees, if it feels right.
If it feels right, say it. But yeah. Don't make me force you to say motherfucker, please.
No.
That's not what this podcast is about.
No.
Say it once for me.
But the man that owned the building, so the people above me in the building were, it turned out they were illegally growing weed, and then there was a raid, and then but the electric bill was massive because of the hydroponics. So then the landlord was like, well, I'm not paying this because it's a ridiculous energy bill. So he didn't tell anyone what he was doing, well, because it was illegal. So he ended up the council came round one day and they shut us down and because he'd been illegally siphoning electricity from the grid. So then I was running it. Why have I told you that? Oh, because... So this is where Barking Tales is now. And I was running it from a generator. But then I almost blew myself up with the bubbling. Because, you know, you've got to fill it with diesel.
Right.
I wouldn't
have done that.
No.
If you don't know which is your left foot and your right foot when you're driving.
Well, exactly.
Don't start filling it. No, generator.
Exactly. But do you know what though? Is it a metaphor that it's such a chaotic build? It fits it perfect.
It's the right place for this. But so it's a place where people, performers and the audience, can come and discuss. Just think comedy has this power where, and I think this is something you talk about in the book, where things that we can't talk about, and where someone is, someone who's got a life that's as unusual as yours and as chaotic as yours, often people might be dismissive or scared of you, or and for a place to, I don't know why they'd be scared of you, Harry.
But
people are suspicious of things they don't understand.
Yeah.
So, and I think the relationship you've had with some of the people, your friends who've found it difficult, I think it's because people don't talk about those subjects. So the minute you write about it or talk about it or do comedy about it, it all makes sense, and that sort of veil falls away from it, which is what you're sort of trying to do, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because the people that come, because I always thought it would just be the comedians would talk about their mental health issues and try and make comedy out of it. I didn't really think of the audience, and then it turns out that they're a lot more interesting than the comedians half the time. The people that come, and a lot of them, it's their only social event. And the one girl, she makes my life look absolutely boring. She was like trafficked, and then all the she's had quite the life, and she's got. I don't think it's to do with the trafficking, but she's got this will be the Tourette's. It's the Tourette's that she's got this tick, and then I say to the comedians that are performing there, I was like, oh, if a woman starts shouting about kittens, don't be alarmed. It's a tick. And then she emailed me once before one of the, because she runs it with me now, and then she emailed me once before one of the shows to say, I think I should let you know, over the weekend I've developed a new tick, which is a sarcastic laugh. So
she's been in a lot of my audiences. I've seen a lot, and just runs around.
So then I answered. So then I emailed the actor. I said, "Do not be alarmed if there's a ha 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 in the." But I didn't put that into words. Yes.
So I remember, tell us about your show that you're doing, where it is, and what the show is. So it's called Trigger Warning, right?
Yeah. So it's 4:20 every day at the Gilded Balloon Paterhoos, the one that used to be the Sea Venues, near the museum. And is it near the museum or the Chambers? You know where I mean. Well, do you? Well, there it is. And it's going to sound depressing, but it's a funny show. It is funny. So it's basically about it's about all the abuse, really, and how it all started via a paper round. So it's like this story about the paper round, but it's very funny because on the paper round there was this pro skateboarding twins. Funny in itself. it's trigger. Well, I can't tell you why it's called Trigger Warning, because that's the show, really.
Okay.
So. But do I tell? But shall I just tell you?
No. Don't let them come and see it. But
okay.
I think that I think that what the book shows is your early experience of stand-up. Maybe you tried different things, and people would tell. A lot of male comedians would tell you how to be a comedian, and you would believe them and try things out. But what it worked when you realised, comedy is about being yourself and not being one of these, not copying anyone else.
Yeah.
I think it takes a little longer, right, when you, because you're so much yourself, and you are very much an individual person and have a very different experience to lots of people, I guess. But by embracing that and being who you are, you're creating this fantastic comedy, because I think, I'm always interested in the connection between comedy and mental illness anyway, because I think a lot of comedy is about treading the line between those two things, because it's about being crazy, isn't it? It's about having crazy ideas and out there ideas. So if you're having those ideas anyway, which I think most of us do to some extent, then that can fuel comedy. But I think by you deciding to ignore all those people and realizing, you know, that you had to be yourself and do what you wanted. That was sort of the epiphany, really, in terms of performance.
Well, yeah, but because then as well, it was fantastic because I thought, wow, I've got all this. Because when I was younger, I didn't finish that sentence. When I was younger, I was like, oh, why does everything always happen to me? It's always tragic. Whereas when I realised to just be myself in comedy, I thought that is a plethora of experience, yeah. Often harrowing. So I've got to, you know, sieve through that. There's loads.
This book being positive, and I'm guessing the show, as you're saying, it's about terrible things, but it's a funny show.
Yeah.
It's finding the positive in that stuff and using your experiences to help other people as well. Because I think if you read this book, it feels like four or five books, and I think you could probably write four or five books, because if you were an aspiring comedian, you could read this, especially if you're an aspiring female comedian, that you could read this and go, oh, right, like, I don't have to take any of this kind of shit. And if you were going on dates with people, you could read and go, oh, okay, so it's not wrong just to tell people to fuck off if they're disrespecting you, you know. So there's a lot of lessons to learn from that, but I think it's also there's lots of funny stuff, and your act is... it's great, you know. I haven't seen like you do a full show yet, but the stuff I've seen is, it reminds me a little bit of Harry Hill, because you would have these little things you throw in little songs or little bits and pieces. But apart from that, you do a routine about the theme tune of The Bill, which is just a great thing to pick on, like, now. But also something that people wouldn't have spotted about the theme tune from The Bill, which you have to see to get what the joke is. But it's absolutely fantastic. So, look, let me ask you some emergency questions, because when we're out and about in the country, when we're in London, we don't have to do this, but around the country, people expect emergency questions.
Why is that?
I don't know. No, I'm joking. I was just trying to be rude to the audience. They love them in London. I'm just trying to pretend there's something. I'll ask you one that I know you have an answer to. You might have more than one answer to do, though. Have you ever seen a ghost, Harriet?
Oh. Yeah. Do you know what? No. Well, I haven't.
But you say you have in the book.
But that's me.
Yeah, so yeah.
Okay. Oh, so that's like my spirit, isn't it? Yeah. Does that count?
Yeah, anything. I mean, come on. If you haven't seen a ghost, who the fuck has seen a ghost?
True. Well, I'm thinking at the minute that my dead mother is in the kettle in where I'm staying in Musselburgh.
That's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing. What's she does? Is the kettle criticising you?
No, she was lovely. She was, but she loved a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Clue one.
Okay.
And we've just been chatting away, like, in the kitchen, and then, because it's like a sort of student set-up, and then, often other people chat away in kitchens, as it happens, and then the kettle will just come on, and even, well, no, that's a lie, I was going to say even when you unplug it, then I couldn't lie, but it just keeps, so I did unplug it before I left, because I didn't trust it, because I thought, goodness, imagine if I burnt the place down.
I mean, if your mum's in there, like a sort of, I'm imagining it like a kind of kettle genie. You can rub it, she might come out. But she'll look after the house, won't she, if she's in there? She's not going to
burn. She's a lovely lady. Do you know what else I thought as well was, because my mum was only ever with my dad, and then once I was doing the dishes, and an advert came on the radio, and it was saying about these new little vibrators, bear with me, from Ann Summers, and they're called the Viv, and I was like, that's my mum's name. Maybe that's what she's come back as. Little vibrators. And then I'll, like, you know, like in the batteries not included. Like, if someone annoys me, I'll go like that, and all these little vibrators will attack.
It's what she would have wanted. I think it's how she would have wanted. So even when your dad left, your mum did never... No.
No, she... Well, so she did a Lonely Hearts, you know, where they didn't even have pictures of that in the newspaper. And then this man turned up, well, because he was the man that replied to the thing. And he had, do you remember that advert that used to be a dog with big eyebrows that, and it would go, got worms? And it was a dog. It was a dog. He looked like that dog. And he had those big eyebrows. And he had like a pink capri shell suit. Yeah. There was a shell suits were banned from this theme park in Cornwall because people were the
on fire.
Yeah. But anyway, so him and my mum went on a date, and it turned out he'd previously pumped my stomach because he was a doctor. He wasn't just a random man pumping my stomach. Yeah.
It was going well, but then once you realise you had that connection, that takes the romance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she went on one date with that man that was a doctor that had worms.
The doctor who looked like a dog with worms who pumped your stomach.
Yeah.
You and have a very normal. It's a very normal life. That's the thing. It's a very. let me ask you another emergency question.
These are fun things.
They are fun, aren't they? Yeah. They are fun. They have good fun. Look, I'm going to ask you this. If you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar and dissolve and come out as anything you wanted to come out of, what would you come out of the chrysalis as? It can literally be anything. It can be you adapted, or it can be something completely different. Yeah.
Could I not just be a caterpillar?
Well, you can. What, you want to turn into a caterpillar in a chrysalis? Not even a butterfly.
Wait a minute. So they start.
So it's you. It's you. It's like you're a caterpillar, but you're you. But you're going to a big chrysalis, and you're going to. What happens in the caterpillar? I don't know if you know about the caterpillar lifestyle.
My partner says I look like a caterpillar.
Well, that's a lovely romantic thing to say.
I think it's because I'm quite long and got a rounded head.
And and 100 legs.
That's a millipede.
Yes, you're right. it's just if you were you instead of a caterpillar, and there was you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar does, and the caterpillar comes out as a butterfly, which is quite different.
Oh, okay. So that would be silly, wouldn't it?
You can change. It'd be weird to change into a caterpillar, but then you would eventually change into a butterfly. So it'd be a way of being.
But I'd always go back to being caterpillar.
I guess if it was the you might. Yeah, I don't know. Good question. Would you always? That'd be bad if you were a caterpillar that went into chrysalises and just came out as a caterpillar every time. Yeah. And all your caterpillar friends will go, why don't you become a bad butterfly like me?
Or could be like an old gnarled, I feel like I'm saying gnarled, weird. Yeah. An old gnarled butterfly.
Yeah, an old gnarled butterfly.
With at the end of its wings have gnarled pigeon claws. Or I could come back in my chrysalis. I would turn into you, and then I'd come here, and then they'd go, "Well, who is the real one?" And I'd be like, "Well, you tell me."
Then I'd someone say, said it's that. Me. I'm saying nobody said you what? No, Harry. No one has said I'd turn into a butterfly with gnarled pigeon claws and then turn into you and then sit here and ask people to say which is the real one.
Well.
No one else has said that. No, so you know. When someone else does say that, I'm going to end the podcast. That's what, the minute that becomes the standard, I'll just retire that. which celebrity have you been uncoolest in the company of? Have you met many celebrities in your time?
So when I first met, but then I think of her as a friend now. That sounds cringe, doesn't it? Is it Sarah Millican?
Sarah Millican.
So yeah. What happened was, I was doing a gig with her, and then my mum had not long died actually, but she wasn't in a kettle then. I was wearing a very long, she doesn't know this, but I was wearing a long, I'm not very good, so we went for food before, and then I think I've probably got IBS, but I can't be dealing with anything else, I mean, goodness. So I smoked at the time, and then I went outside for a cigarette, and then I just like farted loads because of from the dinner. And then what had happened was, my long coat had captured the fart.
Yeah.
And then I went back in, just didn't. Why would anyone think that had happened? Yeah. So then I just whipped my coat off, and it was like a. like a goth grenade. So that happens.
That is embarrassing. That, yeah. That, and also, I bet Sarah thought you'd done that on purpose. She thought she's gone outside to do enough farts in her coat that she can come in and then just fill the room with them. It's quite a good trick.
Yeah, but it did that. You know when people do the... Classic, that.
But she has IBS as well, so she'd understand.
Oh, so I should have.
She was the best person to have done that too. She'd go, good, good. I understand. I've done that. She used to wear that big... sort of flowy. The first time I ever saw her, I just saw her in a silhouette backstage, and she had that. She used to wear that big sort of, I don't know what you describe it, like one of those big skirts that's like a bell. So maybe that's why she wore a bell skirt like that, so that she could just fart in it.
Because there was a slurry going on behind.
If it literally hits the floor, you can walk around, and then when you get back to your room, you just let all the farts out. And you like your own, don't you? It's okay.
Yeah.
But I've been doing one so bad that even I don't like them. I find if you eat too much extra chewing gum.
Oh.
Yeah. Not nice. Don't eat too
much. Oh, the brand.
Yeah. Not like some extra.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, well, where does the amount stop and the extra begin, you know?
It's a good question.
You're there with like
facts. Why did they call it extra? That's an interesting question. It's extra chewing gum. Well, I don't need it. I've got some chewing gum already. Just have some extra, just in case. Worked on me, though. It's delicious chewing gum if you want to advertise on the podcast. Ian Extra, I will have it. Tell us about this. There's so much to talk to you about, Harriet. And the book is absolutely fantastic. So do buy the book and do go and see Trigger Warning. I know it will be awesome. This is a very interesting story about you being nearly on Big Brother, but you basically did Big Brother, but not televised.
Yeah.
To the extent that I'm not sure it actually was Big Brother. I think someone might just locked you in a house, made you do weird things.
With the man that pumped my stomach.
Tell us, how did it come, so you sort of applied for Big Brother?
So I worked in the bull ring at the time, and there was this young lad that was going for the auditions in the planetaria, the science museum across the way. So he was like, oh, do you want to come with me? I said, well, I'm not doing anything tomorrow. I'll come with you. And then, so I just went there and they said, I remember them saying, give three facts about yourself. And I was like, oh, died twice,
yeah.
Gay dad. And then I was just like, I once ate 14 pasties, but that was a lie. That one. And then they loved it. So then I just sort of kept getting through the rounds, and because it was the last one on Channel 4, well, it was supposed to be the last one, but then they wanged it out on Channel 5, didn't they? So then I just sort of was going along with it, really. And then they do a trial house where you're like a guinea pig to see what the house is like. So I went in with all these... It was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking.
But you nearly would, if that had gone well, you'd have been on the...
But thank goodness I wasn't. And I say loads of weird stuff. I would have said something. Well, I said something weird then, I got into trouble because this French guy, we won this task, and then this French guy, it's relevant that I'm saying it's French, I went in the diary room to get the winnings because we did this quiz, and then he just took the wine off me and goes, well, I'm having it because I'm French. What? And then he was just being absolutely obnoxious. So then I said, shut up, Pepe Le Pew. Yeah. And that's racist.
It's a racial slur. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a racial
slur. Is it really?
No.
Oh.
You can say what you like about the French, the Scotch. You can lay into the Scotch. That's all right. The French, that's it. But that's it now. Can't do the Irish. You used to be able to do the Irish. Can't do the Irish anymore. That's it, French and Scotch.
So I was worried. I was good because they all kept going, oh, you shouldn't have said that. So I was like, so I've got all the paranoia spiralled. Thank goodness.
But I was sort of surprised to think they put you through that to get on. I thought they would choose people, but they actually are putting... Was anyone in that house you were with in the actual series?
Yeah, it all made sense when it was the actual one, because the lady that got in, she was from Bristol. So she was like, oh, right there. So it must have been, we must have been competing.
Okay, they put all the West Country ones in our house to find
see, now you're saying
best.
Like that, it doesn't make sense, does it?
It does.
Does it?
It's the guy, but you know, you said they were insane, but they were making you eat dog food and stuff like that.
Yeah, do you know what
that
as
doesn't
well?
Happen on the shows. That's not...
Well, yeah, and you know, when, you know, if you look at well, recently that poor Nikki that died, like, you look at, they're not, I don't think I'm psychologically sound enough to have been, and the, well, the, so I went in this really posh hotel with this man that was doing an assessment, and then, well, he told me he was, and then, and he, I remember, so it was so posh as well, all the walls were glass.
Right.
Like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, isn't it? The second book. And then, and then, and then he had a packet of cigarettes, and then I remember he threw the packet of cigarettes against the wall and goes, "That's your privacy. Is that all right with you?" And I was like, I don't really know what's happening. I just followed. It was also Cloak and Dagger. I just followed a woman with an umbrella down a street. Yeah. And then it was like, it's series 10. No one gives a shit anymore. What are you doing? So then, and that was the psychological assessment.
Right.
Just a man throwing cigarettes.
You know, it sort of sounds, when you see the whole story, it just feels, you know, pretty dodgy. Again, for something that's gone for so long, especially, I suppose, in light of what's happened since with Love Island, people, you know, the sort of psychological effects of being on Love Island.
I thought you were saying I was on Love Island. No, and I was
would you go on Love Island? Because I've got a test backstage, you just have to come and it'll be... But I once, because me and Stu, very early on, like when probably the first 6 months we were in London, we kind of answered an advert. They were making the new That Was the Week That Was. They were saying that was, you know, we want to get a group of people together. And we went to, like, a place in Shepherd's Bush where they had a table full of young writers, and then they made us write loads of stuff and come up with ideas. And then there was a second round, and we didn't get through the second round. And it just felt, and nothing, and that show never materialised. It just felt like they're just people going around just putting people through, just getting kicks from putting through people through. Because also we were obviously the best as well. And there's no way we were come up with loads of ideas and we were really keen and got loads of good stuff. And then we didn't get through to the next round. We thought that's kind of weird because we sort of came up with so much stuff that they seemed happy with. So I don't know if they were just trying to harvest ideas and steal stuff.
Yeah,
but it
maybe.
Seems like, you know, for a show that's established to make the process that complex,
well,
and put you in the house. You know, you were in the house, in the actual house, right?
Yeah.
Before it started.
Yeah, but I remember once in reading Heat magazine, and there was a bird's eye view from the... Oh, wait a minute. It might have been the year that I was in the guinea... Because they said, oh, here's the guinea pigs. So it must be a thing renowned that they must do every year.
Yeah.
So it must have definitely happened.
Yeah, I'm not. You seem to be doubting it. I believed you. It's not like you have to convince me. I'd be disappointed if everything in your books were made. I mean, I'd be quite
Imagine.
Glad because I don't like the fact that the life you've lived is not great in some ways. But I'm glad that you're. I mean, you're. I think it feels like you're at the other end of it, and you're a very happy relationship now, and being treated respectfully, and that's the nice thing about the book is you do get to this. And comedy is, you know, what I love about the comedy community. There's things that are bad about it, but it sort of is. You know, it's a place where anyone can find their where they fit in, and it is sort of hopefully welcoming to a great variety of people. Even though, again, I think those open spot years, you are sort of knocked back and forth by, you know, various bad experiences.
Yeah, just like you say, I was just a bit too trusting, really, and just really wanted to do well. So then when people because I'm terrible for... If people tell me that they're great, I never think, but are you really great? I always think, well, they must be great because they've told me they're great. And that's a flaw. And then, so when when comedians will come up to me and go, right, well, that's what you need to do is be more Cornish, wear this, wear a dress. And I was like, okay, no, definitely not.
Well, it's paid off, and you are very much, that's where you're going to become a great act. Is by embracing everything about you that makes you who you are, and I think, you know, it is that it's self therapy as well as therapy for the audience. So this you know, your barking times it's great for everyone, right? So it works for everyone by talking about stuff that people don't usually talk about. Are you ever confused with the actress Harriet Dyer? Are you aware of an actress Harriet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, well, because she, it was actually in Australia, well, as well, because it was, well, it's, because it, we were competing for a while on who was the, when you Googled, it was me at first.
Right.
That was, but now she's doing very well. She was in The Invisible Man.
Was she?
And that was good. Yeah. And she was in, lots of invisible things, actually, because she was in the Australian version of The Medium with the true story about Alison Dubois, know, the lady that.
I used to watch Medium, the American Medium.
Yeah. That was great.
That was good.
And then, but the Australian one was not as great.
Okay.
But, I often, oh my God, I've just remembered. There was one guy that that said he wanted to kiss me 60 times. And I was like, I think you mean, because he was going on about my acting.
Yeah.
And I was like, you want to kiss Harriet Dyer, the actress, 60 times.
Oh.
So
it's an oddly specific number of times. To, yeah. I mean, if you're going to get in there and get to 60, I think, press on. That's what I said. Don't stop at 60.
I should have taken that for the team and said that it was me, because now he's going to go to heaven. It might have escalated. He might have offered her 120 kisses.
It's annoying if someone else, because Harriet Dyer is not that common a name.
You say that.
Yeah, I do.
I used to work with a Harriet Dyer in a theatre in Cornwall. And then, get this, I once got pickpocketed at the Edinburgh Fringe. And I knew I had, and my bag went missing. And people were going, oh, are you sure you haven't put it somewhere? Why would I walk into to watch a show and then just shot put my bag into a different part of the room? So then my bag got stolen. It was a precision operation because I got the CCTV and someone got it. And then there was another person and they dropped it. And then off they went. And then all my stuff was emptied in a bin near Waverley train station. And then a man found all my stuff in the bin and then searched Harriet Dyer, found the Harriet Dyer that I used to work with in Cornwall, who knew my dad. So she then messaged my dad and said, I think Harriet has had her bag stolen. Yeah. And then I woke up that day to a message from my dad going, oh, someone got their bag stolen last night. And I was like, goodness gracious.
I wonder if he went to the actress Harriet Dyer first.
Well, because this was before that. Because so then, she would have got a message in Australia.
Yeah. I think I've found your credit card's going to kiss you 60 times as a reward. Oh, look, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our time. It's been there literally is so much to talk to you about. We must have you on another time. You haven't even really talked about your... What was that, Liam? Oh, wasn't it you? Was it my watch that just said something?
It sounded like someone...
Oh, it's my watch. I thought it was...
Does it speak?
My watch is having a fucking heckling me.
What does it
or I've, just in your company for an hour and now I'm hearing voices. It could be your mum is living in my watch. Leave and my daughter alone.
I'm now you because of the chrysalis.
I've got to live the rest of my life as Harriet Dyer. Thank God. Well, I'm happy to live your life now because your life's good now. So I'll go and take one for the team. I'll go and kiss your lovely partner. Look, it's been fantastic to have you. Go and see Harriet at the Gilded Balloon at
4:20.
4:20. Let's get the time right. Trigger warning. I promise you will not regret it. Absolutely a fantastic comedian. We are back here tomorrow, if you are here live, with the girls from All Killer No Filler, Rachel and Kiri, which will be fabulous as well. And there are dates going on till the 14th. Tickets available for all shows at the moment. Will you please give it up for my fantastic first guest of this Edinburgh run, Harriet Dyer, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. We'll see you again. Come again. See you tomorrow. Different show tomorrow. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
You have been listening to The Hullustapper from the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring, and my fantastic guest, who I know you know who it was. I'm not going to tell you again. You're not stupid. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my technician and friend, Rhys Thomas. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and to all fantastic crew at the ballroom, at the assembly rooms, and everyone at the assembly rooms in Edinburgh. What a fantastic lot of people you are. Thanks for all your help. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hold up. Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.